Sahanau bhunaktu sahavirayam karavavahai gnavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai Om shantih Om jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki Jai. Jagadish is out on the veranda today.
It's sunny here, and I was thinking instead of sitting in a dark room, which is cold anyway, I'm just going out, and it's cold, but it's very sunny and kind of nice.
Yeah, no, sun is nice, even though it's cold, but it's still, it gives in some sense. I mean, that's the whole point of the Sabha tree, is that, we are inspired by, it inspires our service. So one, you have the sun is out, just the conditioned nature feels better because it's the natural environment. So the mind, the intelligence, the identity work very nicely. But also then it has the aspect that the actual that the sun, that light of the sun, that Bhargo Deva is actually Srimati Radharani. She is the light of the sun. So Krishna, and then Radharani is the light of that sun. So then we become inspired from what do you call it? Yeah, then we become inspired in devotional service, seeing by her grace and by seeing her service, and we're inspired. Yes. So will we have some reading, or who will be reading? Or no one's reading.
Charachandra, please.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can. Hopefully, I won't get kicked off again. If I do, I'll run downstairs again.
I
So,
see. Okay.
we're on Anucheta 26, and we're on Srila Prabhupada's commentary to verse 2139. Just to refresh the memory of the verse, one should concentrate his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who alone distributes himself in so many manifestations, just as ordinary persons create thousands of manifestations in dreams. One must have mind on him.
That the end of that verse?
One must concentrate the mind on him, the only all blissful absolute truth. Otherwise, one will be misled and will cause his own degradation. That's the end of the
Yes,
verse.
so, okay, yes. So this is important because all there is Krishna, the person. And then he, through his diverse energies, then he spreads himself everywhere. So everything we see is actually Krishna, but it's just the parts, and various manifestations of his Shaktis. So whatever is there, whatever, because everything we see has a uniqueness, it has qualities, it has purpose, it has existence, but that's all based on Krishna, because Krishna is existence. Krishna is that uniqueness. Krishna is the qualities by which something can act and get its purpose, the results. So the whole point is that as these aspects of Shankarshan, Prajumna, Anirudha, Bhakti, everything. And so in this way, he is, there's the direct aspects that are, the nice ones, everything, and there's the indirect. So the direct then is going to be those qualities that are naturally his qualities. And while the indirect is going to be the lack of those qualities, so there is only Krishna, and so he's expanding, through the features of Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So everything as Bhagavan, it's all him, and then it's manifest in this particular way, and so then some manifestations are nice, some are not as nice, But the point is they all originally come from him. And if we think any other, way, we will be deluded, you know, because the only, if we think something, oh, it's so nice, if everything would just be prosperous and everyone would get along and everything would be nice, it would be so wonderful. You know, as someone said, you know, if there was a alternative, kinder universe, then, you know, it would be like this. But that's thinking that the material energy itself has a value in itself. No, its only value is its value as an expansion of Krishna. So therefore, the material world on its own can never be perfect, because there is no such thing as the material world on its own. That doesn't exist. That's the illusion. The illusion is this material world is its own entity. And then there's Krishna consciousness as an alternative. No, there's only Krishna and Krishna consciousness. As an alternative reality, we can be an illusion under that ignorance, that original avidya, in which then we don't see things in connection with Krishna. So that's actually what's happening. It just means we don't see how Krishna is everything and everything's connected to Krishna and everything's a relationship to Krishna. That then becomes the material, so-called reality. There is only Krishna. There is only Krishna consciousness. There isn't something else. Then just like you have the regular society, that's what there is. Then you have people who are clinically insane. They think there's a different reality and a different thing. And, you know, I'm Napoleon Bonaparte, or, that everybody's coming to get me and like that. And they're putting, microchips in your orange juice, and, you know, they're controlling you. And if you drink this much of orange juice, that they'll completely control you. And, you know, I mean, this is not a reality. This is just, they're insane. So then that becomes the point, is that, but if you're in the insane asylum, then it seems like it's its own reality. And so then what do you have? You have people that are not from the insane asylum, but they're from what we call the regular society. They come in and try to help those there and try to keep them on a more balanced platform. So the same way is that the Lord, they come, and then they try to keep people on, try to be Krishna conscious, try to bring them to a more proper, suitable position. But in actuality, if there's not, if it means there is no material reality, its reality is, it's the energy of Krishna. And that is actual Krishna consciousness. So if you see like that, everything else can be put into place. How does it support the real, actual reality, rather than what? And then everything just adjusts very simply, very straightforward, no problem. I say no muss, no fuss. Yes. Anything on any points on that, or no? Okay. Charuji, can you please?
Yes. So, the Supreme Lord is one, and his expansions are various. He is therefore the supersoul of everything. When a man sees anything, he must know that his seeing is secondary and that the Lord's seeing is primary. One cannot see anything without the Lord having first seen it. That is the instruction of the Vedas and the Upanishads.
Yeah. So here, then that's Prabhupada speaking, or that's Jiva Goswami?
Yeah, that's Srila Prabhupada's purport on that verse.
Okay, Isudriti. So that's the aspect that we see here, is that Prabhupada, even our ability to see and perceive this world and interact with it, that's because Krishna's seen it first. Krishna's involved with it first. So therefore, we should be involved in those things that are favorable to him. Since he's seeing, he'll be pleased with. You know, since he's doing, you know, he's the potency of doing, so then we should just do those things that are going to be, pleasing to him. So the whole idea comes back to not only did everything as a Brahman, he is the working principle on which governs everything, but he's also the person that everything should be connected to. So as the person, he's the one that's we should be considering. Please.
So whatever we see or do, the super soul of all acts of seeing or doing is the Lord. This theory of simultaneous oneness and difference between the individual soul and the super soul is propounded Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the philosophy of Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. The Virat Rupa, or gigantic feature of the Supreme Lord, includes everything materially manifest, and therefore the Virat, or gigantic feature of the Lord, is the supersoul of all living and non-living entities. But the Virat Rupa is also the manifestation of Narayan, or Vishnu. And going further on and on, one will eventually see that Lord Krishna is the ultimate of everything that be. The conclusion is that one should unhesitatingly become a worshiper of Lord Krishna, or, for that matter, his plenary expansion, Narayan, and none else. In the Vedic hymns, it is clearly said that first of all, Narayan cast a glance over matter, and thus there was creation. Before creation, there was neither Brahma nor Shiva, and what to speak of others? Padacharya has definitely accepted this, that Narayan is beyond the material creation, and that all others are within the material creation. The whole material creation, therefore, is one with and different from Narayan simultaneously. And this supports the Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Wow. Prabhupada's quoting there, basically quoting, just translating the verses of... You know, and so then, you know, we see Prabhupada do that also. And one, and there's another purport that I haven't come across again. It was a long time ago I saw it, where Prabhupada was just giving the translation of the Sanyasupta and saying this is the essence of the Veda. And so the, you know, because we can see the Vedas for being involved in performing one's religious activities in connection with the Supreme. So then the secondary religious activities that hold all the activities together or create the basis for the, you know, the social interaction is going to be the Varnashram system. And then of this Varnashram system, then the Sannyas Ashram is the pinnacle. Or it's not even just the ashram, it's the mentality. It's a Sannyas mentality that everything is being done for the Supreme Lord. So therefore, then the Sanyasupta then becomes actually the conclusion of what the Veda Samhita is for. So it's very interesting how Prabhupada just so pleasantly, you know, and comfortably works in these Vedic verses. You know, just, I mean, it's not like he's just paraphrasing, he's using direct translations there. So he does that with the Sanyasupta here, then with the Narayansupta. Then in, you know, many of his purports, when he's talking about Varnashram, he's quoting actually direct translations of the verses of Mantra. He's not just giving some, you know, just a few points. So this whole thing is that it's all about Krishna. There is nothing else. You know, if you think there's something else, that's an illusion. You know, well, there's Krishna and no, there's only Krishna. There's a variety of ways in which we can serve Krishna, be absorbed in Krishna, please Krishna. That you have unlimited aspects. But the idea that anything is other than have a connection with Krishna, that is illusion, and that will create problem for the living entity. Like when we get disturbed and we think, oh, when will all this, that, and so many things. No, you just surrender to Krishna. And then all these secondary things will fall into place. Because as we see, it's not actually what the situation is. It's whether it's giving you a good experience. Just like, let's say the mother is carrying the child and the child is weighing quite a bit. Thing. But for the mother, it's a pleasant experience. But if you gave her the same amount of, groceries or something to carry, you know, 20 kilos of groceries, it would be a disturbance. You know, so that's why you see the mother carries the baby, the father carries the groceries. you know, because then you get the proper experience. You know, the man thinks I'm doing something, you know, and that, and the wife is thinking that, yes, this is, you know, the child personal and all that. So the Vedas give so many, the Acharyas then give so many of these nice examples of something that seemingly is painful, but because it's on the personal platform, it's not considered painful at all. So that's the thing, is that we're having difficulties, and as long as those difficulties are not seen in connection with Krishna, those difficulties will stand to us as and be perceived as difficulties. But as soon as we see surrender to Krishna, and see Krishna, then there are no more difficulties, just like Kunti Devi saying. So this is a very, because there is only Krishna, there's not something else, there's not this wonderful mundane reality, like Prabhupada says, the Karmis want Ram Rajya without Ram. That doesn't exist. There is only Ram Rajya with Ram. Then it's Ram Rajya. Otherwise, it's just, you know, the material world, and we're trying for the heavenly planets and this and that. But at the same time, the heavenly of it is still coming from Krishna. Because Krishna is the power of the senses. And that, because he sees, then you see. You see something, Nandankana is very beautiful. That's because Krishna already sees it. We can only tap into what he sees. We can only tap into what experiences are there. And so in the universal forms, you have those forms that are considered pious, that are close to Krishna and how he performs his pastimes. And then you have those things that go out into varieties, 8,400,000 species of life. And so the potencies of those are still Krishna. So how the, you know, how you say honey badger sees life, you know, like that, how, you know, he's just, he'll go after anything, and he is totally unforgiving of anybody and anything. And so then his acting is just, you get that, you take it home, you eat it, that's it. And so then, but that mentality, that potency, that determination, all that's coming from Krishna. So the positive qualities are from Krishna. The negative qualities are just the less. So he's seeing in that way, but as in that form, as the, you know, Adi honey badger. And then we can see in that way if we want as humans, and then in our next life, we can become one of those. Does that make some sense? No. I mean, any badger is going to harass. That's why you say someone who's constantly bothering you is called a badger. He's badgering you. Because a badger, I mean, I remember seeing once somebody's walking out in the savannah, and somehow another, you know, because he's walking through some of the low grass, bumps into a badger. Not a honey badger, a smaller one. And then that badger is so annoyed, it latches onto the guy's boot, you know, completely surrounds his boot at the end, scratching and this and growling and all that. And you can't get them off, you know, so the guy just keeps walking. And he walks for kilometers, and this badger the whole time is like that, the whole time. So that's where these things come from. So when people act in a way that's not human, they're just acting according to the various animals. And still, but that potency is from Krishna, it's expansion of Krishna. And that's why it works, that's why it has potency. So therefore, if we surrender to Krishna directly, as a person, as the, you know, the son of Mother Yashoda, you know, as the you know, the dearmost of the residents of Vrindavan, then surrendering to him, then you're not caring about Krishna's expansion as a badger that's, you know, biting your boot. You know, you're just absorbed in Krishna on that side. And so then these things happen because the material world means there's going to be something weird. If you want everything just perfect, nothing goes wrong, that means there's no action. You know, so that's an illusion. Oh, there'll be all this wonderful activities and results, but there'll be nothing going wrong. And that is kind of like, what? How is that working? I mean, so, you know, Indra is there. He's sitting there on his throne enjoying himself. And then buffalo comes along. I mean, a buffalo. Not this big monster, you know, demon with, you know, shining armor and all that and so many muscles and mystic powers. No, a buffalo. A buffalo comes in and with his horns just you know how buffaloes move things with their horns. Yeah, whoosh, and Indra's off the seat, and the buffalo sits down. And Indra can do nothing about it. And none of his assistants can do anything about it. That buffalo is sitting there, and that's it. So Indra has to go this, that, and so many things, and finally they have to bring in the total material energy, you know, Maya Devi herself, to kill this guy. You know, and so it's just by the arrangement of the Lord then these things happen, all these, you know, amazing pastimes and all that. So that's how you get pastimes. It's just as we think happiness is clearing a problem. You know, I'm hungry. That's a problem. I clear that problem of hunger. I get something to eat. I'm happy. So in the spiritual platform, then also it is these things. Yoga Maya then arranges these seeming difficulties so that one can apply oneself to actually correcting them. But there's not any problems. There are no problems. There's no karma there. It's just different ways that devotees can express their devotion to the Lord. I think this is explained in a purport when it's talking about Parikit Maharaj, that there's no bad karma here. He's a pure devotee. How can there be bad karma? So it's not that he's been cursed by this Brahmin and this and that. No, this is just an arrangement of Yoga Maya for pastimes so he can express his devotion to the Lord. You know, and then some unscrupulous people see, oh, see, this bad things happen, so you can't actually be very advanced, so why we should listen to Bhagavatam? So this is all nonsense. I think we studied that a couple of years ago. You know, in one of the games in London. So then this is pastimes. For us, we take it seriously and it's life and death. But in actuality, when you surrender to Krishna, then you're just taking part in pastimes. But otherwise, if not, then you're on your own. It's your own thing. You have to remove that trouble by Krishna's grace due to your previous karma or surrender to him. Then, you know, you get over it and then you say you're happy. You remove the negative. You haven't done a positive. Well, you see, with Krishna, then if you're doing it to please Krishna and devotion to Krishna, now you're adding in the Hladini potency, the Ananda principle. Now we get devotional ecstasy from that. So it's the same kind of principles going on. But one is just various ways to interact with Krishna, and the other is various ways that we could think I'm the controller and enjoyer of the material energy. So it always goes back to, and that means that devotional service becomes the only abhideya. No others, nothing else is actually abhideya. It only takes on that quality if it's connected to Krishna. So karma, jnana, yoga, only when it's connected to Krishna does it take on the quality of yoga. And then otherwise it's just maya, it binds you. It's just in the realm of karma. You know, and so this cuts out the demigods, it cuts out everything. All that's left is just pure devotional service. We good? Yes, Jagadish.
I was just thinking when you were explaining, you know, this particular episode, is that because of Christian background and this utopian idea that in heaven everything's going to be perfect, many devotees think that, you know, the description of the Veda, it's you know, it's strange, because we see in Bhagavatam what's described about heavenly planets, always there are some troubles. And even in the spiritual world, there are no troubles because it's Vaikuntha, but there are obstacles, so-called, to increase the pastimes of the Lord. So it's a very different approach to the whole idea of what's spiritual and what's not. So and it seems to be that we just project what we've learned, or from previous life, you know, from previous impressions, that what we think should be spiritual or heavenly, and then I've seen for many years devotees can digest the points that you were explaining about the Indra and about even about Vrindavan pastimes, because it seems to go there. There's so many difficulties. I mean, I'm having difficulties here. Why would I go there if it's like, if it's the same?
I mean, since you're going to have difficulties, why not take part in those difficulties rather than these? As we see, there is all the transcendental ecstasy. While here, you know, what do you get? You know, it doesn't matter what you do, you end up with a scratch and a little ding on your Ferrari. Doesn't matter what you do. You know, and then you have to take it down to the shop. It will cost you, you know, $2,000 to fix it. You know, so it's like there's only going to be problems. So why not go there? But yes, because there's this idea, but it's all about their happiness. It's centered around them. It's egocentric in this case. It's not Krishna-centric. And it's going to be how they like it. You know, it's going to be how they like it. You know, just like, let's say, those who have been religious, you know, like you're saying in the Christian faith or that, then when they go to heaven, they'll be in a youthful body because they started young. But let's say you're born into it, and since you're a little baby, you just, so that means you're going to be a baby there? No, they all want to be an attractive youth. But then if someone only comes to God consciousness and accepts Jesus within their heart when he's 70 years old before he dies, he's going to be a 70-year-old man there. You know, it makes me feel good because, you know, I'm better than him. And if I think that if it's the same, well, I'll wait until I'm 70 before I surrender. So you end up with all these very, very difficult things that, you know, the church and others have to work with to get people to have the proper faith. But only the Vedas put it into the proper perspective so that one can have that faith. And it's scientific and it's consistent. Otherwise, it's as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, you only have this one life and that's it. Then why is it everybody's not starting at the same point? You know, why is someone starting, you know, half a foot before the goal and someone else is starting, you know, 26 feet? It's a marathon, you know? So, you know, it doesn't make sense. This is, it's not logical. Therefore, this whole idea that you have one life, and you know, you're born and this and that, and then you become God conscious. No, this is an ongoing continuation. So the karma is there and this and that, but all these have been removed, at least from the Christian theology. And so then it becomes very difficult. You know. Yes, so they have to. Devotees have to understand and go beyond their conditioning. Otherwise, yes, they'll get as far as they can. It means that one doesn't have to worry. One's all that chanting, taking prasad, doing service, hearing Bhagavatam, taking darshan, you know, living in the Dham. All this will have wonderful benefit. And so if at the time of death, you know, with the support of the devotees and kirtan and that, they remember Krishna, they'll go back to Godhead. But it that they have where they don't appreciate these things so much, then you see that's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was talking about, is that those gopis, you know, with, you know, that has that kind of concept and mentality, then they get into the household duties and everything, trying to find happiness there, even though they know it's about Krishna, but they're still, you know, absorbed in their kids around the house and their duties and making their cow dung patties and doing all the stuff that they do. And so then when it comes to the rasa dance and Krishna calls, then naturally it's just like, let's say you have whatever devotee is there and he's absorbed his making his money and his family and this and that and so many things. But when it comes to, let's say it's Janmashtami and it's a big program and, you know, let's say some, you know, person that he very much appreciates is going to be giving, you know, some discussions and bhajans on Krishna, he'll want to go. So, but the thing is, you know, here is that because of sadhaka, then he can go. Whether he'll be absorbed or not is another thing. But at least there's a good chance it'll be a little bit more. But here, because you're directly dealing with Krishna, is that if it's just about, you know, I want all the, I want this happiness and I want that happiness, it's not exclusive. So then Yogamaya doesn't let them go, want to go. And so then in that wanting to go, then it burns up all material pious and impious activities. We always think of burning off impious. It burns. You have to burn off the pious also. The desire for sense gratification comes from from having pious samskaras. Piety creates the desire for sense gratification, because you think, yes, it can be done. We can be happy. We can, you know, and only people who have piety, it works out. Because even people who are not pious, they do what they want. But, you know, how much are they happy? How much are they satisfied? How much are they absorbed? You know, what do they actually get from it? You know, it's just, you know, so that's the thing, is that they've had some strong samskara and an activity on the material platform. They spend the whole rest of their life trying to replicate that, and they never can. You know, so therefore, you know, they're not getting anywhere. It's not, they have the desire for, but they're not getting any sense gratification, really. Or you, when they do, oh yeah, it's got this and that, and it's momentary. So, you know, so everybody has this combination of pious and impious, especially if they're human. There has to be some pious, otherwise why are they human? And so they have to understand is that those gopis, only after burning up by intense meditation on Krishna, then it comes to the point of samadhi. You know, it's exclusive. Then that burns up all the pious and impious. Then depending upon if that happened like immediately, there was just a slight amount left, then they went to Krishna. Immediately, Yoga Maya arranged that they could get out of the house and go. Even though they were stopped, they got out. But then you have those that couldn't get out, and then they're locked in their rooms and all that. And so then being locked there, then in that position, they give up, I mean, say they give that pious and impious identity and that concept. Because the material body means I see myself as separate from Krishna, or that I can do things for myself. So therefore, that gopi there, then when it says they gave up their material body, means they give up all identification as separate from simply being an exclusive servant of Krishna. Then in the spiritual form, they could go, or they would go at the next rasa dance. So like that is that, yes, you can go back to Godhead, but you're still going to have to overcome these points. So you overcome them now, it just makes it easier later. You know, and it's, that's the whole point, as Krishna says in Gita, it's joyfully performed. People are happy doing this. They're happy in their Krishna consciousness. So therefore it's worthwhile. It's wonderful. So then to take advantage of this, then you move forward now. It means prema, you have to leave this form to come to, but you can still come and enter the pastimes, you know, while you're here. But if not, you'll do it there. It just means that it means less trouble. So it says those that had that kind of, didn't have these kind of attachments and misgivings, then they immediately, you know, as they're, you know, born into the Vrindavan scene, they get the association of the Nitya Siddha gopis. And so by being associated with them, they take on that mood of prema that they have, you know, following that footsteps, that raga nuga. And so then following that, then they're able to take part in the pastimes. That then brings them then from that, you know, apandas, then that brings them then to the point of prema. Then there's nothing left of their material connection. So it's a very nice thing, is that anybody, even the neophyte, if he thinks of Krishna, he will go back to Godhead. And Braj is so nicely organized that even state you go there as a neophyte, you still can advance and come to the platform of prema. You know, so at some point before the Dantavakra pastimes, you know, and then everything goes apricot, then you come to prema and then you become part of the apricot. But if one's so attached and so this and that, then one will go to the next prakat lila, and then continue from there. And until you get it right, until you come to the platform of prema. But the point is then you'll be functioning on that platform, because once going there, you won't return. But why spend the extra time? Why not move forward? You're going to have to do it at some time. Why not now? Is that work, Jagadish Ji? Yeah. Yes. this.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Yes, Hare Krishna.
I was reading one investigation of one scholar who analyzed the Bible, and it's addition to the question about perfection in a Christian tradition. And he said that if we will analyze the Bible, the stories of Bible, we will see that all of the prophets and all of the heroes in this book, they firstly didn't have perfection in their own qualities, means they had some problems, some difficulties, and sometimes they created some sinful activities also. And then he said, and also their situation also was not perfect, never was ideal. And he said that means that for the Bible gave example that person who connected with God, he should not be completely perfect himself, and he should be in a perfect situation, and his connection with God makes him interesting for being in a holy book.
Yes, it's not the mistakes, it's what they do in Krishna consciousness, you know, in God consciousness. That's the whole point, because point is, the general people, whether they're making mistakes or not, they're not God conscious. So if somebody's God conscious, since that's the purpose of human life, therefore, that's why they're in the book. You know, so that's why people can understand. That's why you see is that in the Old Testament, basically, they kind of leave it alone. Though I have seen myself that they do remove portions of it, that to make it kind of fit in with their with the concepts of the New Testament. New Testament, they don't have any qualms at all about, at least in the past, of removing portions that they don't like. And so, like what you're saying here, that there's imperfections, they don't like that. That's why you see in the New Testament, everybody's squeaky clean, you know. And at least in Catholicism, you know, you have to be perfect and you know, how you say, immaculate. Otherwise, as soon as something's wrong, then everything's, you know, you're tossed out. I'm not sure about that in Orthodox, because I think in Orthodox, the priest can be married, you know, Oriental also, but somehow or other Catholicism, then, you know, everybody's got to be squeaky clean, you know. And so then there's this mundane idea of material perfection, you know. And so, yes, it gets in the way. But if you understand as nothing's perfect, and the only perfection is God consciousness, then you can start talking. Then you can take advantage of what they did right, not what they did wrong. Because you don't even know why it's going on. You know, it means a little bit is given. And if you know those kind of situations, you can understand it. But at the same time, as you know, just like they go in and you have this other group. What is it in that Old Testament? The story that the Israelites are traveling along. They get to one place, and then the king in that place sends this messenger that his son wants to marry one of the girls. You know, I guess maybe it's the whoever is the head there, his daughter, and this and that. And so then whatever is going on, but at the end it didn't work out very well for that non-Jewish group, for those pagans there, you know. So you could say it was a very rough thing, but you don't know what's the background, what's the politics, what they actually tried to do. All is told is the main points of the story. You don't hear about if they tried to kidnap the girl, or they were killing Jews, or you know what was going on. You don't hear about all that, because you know it's we're not talking here Mahabharata. You know, we're talking that they're just sticking to the most essential principles. And so then the thing to take is how they, no matter what the situation, then they did everything according to the tradition, you know, like that. And so even though it was a political position, they stuck to that, you know, and people make mistakes, but then they get it together, you know. So those kind of things are to be understood, because if everything is just perfect, how can we be inspired? But we can see is that all the various, you know, patriarchs, everybody made some mistakes. So that means we also, if we make a mistake, we can go forward. you know. But if you use this so-called eternal damnation and that, you make any mistake, then that's it. You're finished for life. And so then, you know, how is that going to work? And then eternally, you know, you don't attain heaven, this, that. And so why should anybody be inspired? You know, if we're talking about personalism, then there's going to be, you know, uniqueness and mistakes. And all that kind of things goes together. I mean, even the marriage ceremony, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, you know, all that kind of stuff. You know, they're talking about the things aren't always nice. Sometimes they are, sometimes they're not. Is that okay?
Yes, Guru Maharaj. And Guru Maharaj, as I see in the Christian and Muslim tradition, in those branches where they have impersonal understanding of God, they usually have concept of ideal person. Like, for example, in Sufism, it's the idea of Insan al-Kamil, mean perfect man. They consider if someone connected with God, he shouldn't have any problem in his qualities.
Any faults, yes.
Yes, any faults. And can we say that if people have a deviation in their karma, they expect ideal situation after being connected with God? And if they have deviation to jnana, they expect to be a perfect person without any faults?
I would say is that it can be both, because see, is that let's say you're doing pious activities, you want to go to heaven. So the quality of heaven that you will attain is dependent upon the quality of your pious acts. So the better the pious acts, the higher you go. So the person is most perfect is the higher. You also have the thing is that it could be, it could also, I think you could take it from that impersonal, be the opposite. So whatever is here, it has to be the opposite. So people have faults here. So that means the spiritual person can have zero faults. You know? So yes, you could say. Because on all cases, even the karma is going to have an aspect of the impersonal, because they're not including Krishna, you know, the person or God, even as Paramatma, as part of the scene necessarily. They're religious, then they're counting Paramatma, but they're not counting him as a person. He's just God, he's perfect, and that's why they're worshiping him, because he's perfect. They're not worshiping him because they like him as a person. You know, God's a great person. No, it's just that you know, he's the supreme and all that. And you have to worship him. Otherwise, problem. You know, you end up with Sodom and Gomorrah, right? You know, so yeah, and so people kind of you want to avoid that. You know.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Okay. Everybody else is good? Okay. Yes. Charuji.
Okay. Continuing the Uddhuti. Being an emanation from the glancing potency of Narayan, the whole material creation is non-different from him. But because it is the effect of his external energy, Bahirangamaya, and is aloof from the internal potency, Atmamaya, the whole material creation is different from him at the same time. The example given in this verse very nicely is that of a dreaming man. The dreaming man clings in his dream, and thus he himself becomes the entangled seer of the dream and is also affected by the consequences. The material creation is also exactly a dreamlike condition of the Lord. But he, being the transcendental supersoul, is neither entangled nor affected by the reactions of such a dreamlike creation. He is always in his transcendental position, but essentially, he is everything and nothing is apart from him. As a part of him, we should therefore concentrate on him only, without deviation. Otherwise, one is sure to be overcome by the potencies of the material creation, one after another. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:7 as follows. Sarva bhutani kaunteya prakritim yanti mamikam kalpakshaye punastani kalpadau visrajamyaham. O son of Kunti, At the end of the millennium, every material manifestation enters into my nature. And at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I again create. End quote. The human life, however, is an opportunity to get out of this repetition of creation and annihilation. It is a means whereby one may escape the Lord's external potency and enter into his internal potency. And that's the end of that quoted purport.
That purport. Yeah, so Prabhupada is very nicely pointing out here is that it's his glance, so it's non-different from him, but because then that glance is having the effect and empowering the external energy. It works only under the internal energy. It's different from him. But at the same time, it's still his potency. It's still non-different from him, but it's different. That's the uniqueness, is that the personal is different and non-different. Because you see, if everybody else, they're getting close to it. Either it's different, you know, or it's the same, or it's, you know, in a same in a purified state or state in a unique state, but not that it's simultaneously one and different, because then Krishna is different from his creation, but at the same time he's non-different from his creation. So he is a person. What he wants, what he desires, what he does is going to be unique to him. And then what's going on in the creation and this and that is it according to his desire, but it's accommodating all the interests and needs of the living entities in being separate from Krishna. And so then, yeah, so you end up with that kind of, those kind of unique situations, which don't get in the others. That's why they can't actually get beyond Goloka. They can't get to Braj, because only in Braj is it 100% Bhagavan. In all the others, it's Bhagavan, but in his feature as Brahman, or his feature as Paramatma, like that, there's some feature element there. So there all means all the Vaishnava Acharyas are dealing with Bhagavan, but it's just how far they're taking it, how close they're getting. But none of them will get to Braj like that. But there, it's just like you say, it's a stepping stone, is that you're starting off with the Karmakandiyas, and then Buddha comes in to try to bring them to a proper mentality, not so materialistic, more peaceful, more interested in the spiritual, more spiritual energy. Shankaracharya brings that back into the Vedas, so they accept the authority of the Vedas and the practices of the Vedas. Then Ramanujacharya then brings that into, but it's, you know, it's that unique oneness. And so what that uniqueness is, and that has to be brought out. That's the Vaishnava, how the Lord and the living entity have that common ground of that personal interaction. You know, then Madhvacharya will come, and then who didn't catch that because they were too attached to their oneness, he tries to destroy that concept of that oneness without connection with the Lord. And then Lord Chaitanya comes and gives the Achyutatva. So then we see that there's a nice progression there, you know. And then you go back, Nimbarka, then, you know, was dealing with Radha and Krishna, you know, in spontaneous devotional service, but still not on that one different. It's one, it's different. You have these two, you have both perspectives. It could be this perspective and this perspective, but it's not simultaneous. You're looking at it this way, you're looking at it that way. Like I can look at the front of the jacket, I can look at the back of the jacket. So they're two different perspectives, but they both exist. But I'm looking at one or the other. Go on simultaneously. That's only Lord Chaitanya. Yes? No? Jagadish Ji?
Yes, I'm thinking also that, as you explained it philosophically, there's also a progression in terms of the deity, you know, which deity, you know, traditionally people, so for Buddhists, there are no deities. They don't believe in any form. I don't even know. It's like, nothing is there. It's just void.
Yeah, well, but that only lasted during the time of Buddha, that was what he was doing. But his followers, they became influenced by the Bengalis, the tantrics. And therefore, then they started the tantric thing, and then their deities. So they have the Buddha deity, they have, you know, Shiva, they have Parvati, they have time, you know, and all these kind of, you know, aspects. But yes, pure Buddhism doesn't have any deity, nothing, no temple. You don't even make a house, nothing. All you do is wander. You know, you do your meditation in the morning, you wander during the day, you stop at this time of the day, I guess, when the sun is, you know, or just before, whatever it is, go out, do your begging. Then after that, then you spend the rest of the day also meditating, discussing, and this and that. And that's your life, that you don't do anything else.
Yeah.
But that, you know, only Krishna can do that as Buddha. And so then those associates that, you know, were attracted by it, but they couldn't maintain it. And so then they took up the Bengali influence, you know.
So for them, there's no deity. Then when, you know, Shankar comes and kicks out the Buddhists, then they're Pancha Upasana. So it's very basic. It's incomplete, but also they don't see any difference. They see only oneness or absolute oneness. Then after Shankara, Ramanuja comes, and their deity is, you know, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, basically. So it's all in reverence. But it's of course, it's nice. It's Vaikuntha.
Yeah.
But that level of Vaikuntha. Then next come Madhva. Then he's worshipping Krishna, you know, without... It is Krishna, but he's very young, and they don't worship, you know, his associates as much.
Yes, yes. But also, you have that aspect of what do you call it? They also see themselves as Sarupya Mukti with four arms and all that. So from what I see is you have that aspect of you can have that four arms and that in Mathura.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. And then come... I mean, historically was before, but his deities are Radha and Krishna, but also they call it Swarasiki, means they always together, natural.
Yes, yes.
So they it is Radha and Krishna, but only that kind of worship. And then Mahaprabhu brings Vipralamba, which is the highest. So we can see the philosophy matches the deity that the...
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought about
that. Maharaj made that parallel.
Yeah, very nice. Very nice parallel. Because the aspect of Madhvacharya is worshipping Krishna, and that was also why I think Lord Chaitanya accepted in the line of Ramanujacharya, I mean Madhva, because of worship of Krishna. And he's worshiping on the Goloka level, not on the Gokula level.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So it's still Vaikuntha, but then it's going to a higher level of Vaikuntha. Because Ramanujacharya then only goes up to Parampadam. You know, it's that Mahanarayan after the first quadruple expansion. You have Krishna to Balaram then to Shankar, Shanprajum, Nadi, Rudra, Vasudev, the first expansion, because that's actually Krishna's expansion. Then from that Sankarshan, then you get Mahanarayan.
Yes.
So that's Parampadam. Then from that Mahanarayan, you get the second quadruple expansion of Chaturvyuha. And from that second quadruple expansion of Sankarshana, then the expansion goes into the Purusha avatars, you know, Mahavishnu and Garbhadakshaya and like this. So for them, then if you're not worshipping Mahanarayan, then you're worshipping, you know, the Purusha avatars and all their expansions, as Leela avatars and this and that. So they only see his expansion of Kiradakshaya Vishnu. And then you come back up, but it's actually originally coming from Mahanarayan. But then it appears like what you're saying here is that Madhvacharya, then you're going beyond Mahanarayan, back to that Krishna, that first quadruple expansion. Because there's that, you know, you can have four arms or not. You know, you can have two arms or not. You know, so it you know, it has that aspect of, you know, he's God and this and that, but at the same time, you also have that element of that, you know, pleasantness, sweetness, and all those kind of things. So he brings it to that level, and then Mahaprabhu then brings it up to Braj.
Yes. Well, the main point with Madhva, although they worship Krishna, but he's without Radhika. So
yes.
It is self, but not enough for higher realm.
Yeah. Oh, because if he's in, all the Dwarka Mathura pastimes, he's without Radhika.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they come in the form of, as we saw in that, what do you call it? The Lalita Madhava. That they, you know, when it goes into the apricot, from the prakat to the apricot, you have that aspect of where they enter into the Jamuna. Though the pastimes continue there in Vrindavan and all that, but at the same time, then it gives rise to them leaving there and then going to Dwarka and taking part in the Dwarka pastimes. But you see, as they themselves in that first quadruple expansion and all that, on that level, they identify as Brajbasis who happen to be in the Dwarka environment. But you see, in the second quadruple expansion, then you're going to have that they identify as Vaikunthavasis, as Dwarka and Mathura, as the original.
Yes.
Yeah, so it depends on how one worships, how one surrenders to Krishna, then how those things, unfold. That's all. So that's the whole thing. It's about the mentality. So depending, like those the Brajbasis, they're always dealing with Krishna. In the Dwark aspect, this first quadruple expansion, because it's Krishna from Vrindavan who's gone to Dwarka, right? But then for others, it's no, Dwarka is its own scene. And then there is that some connection and all that. It makes for wonderful pastimes, but it's about Dwarka. So that'll be the second quadruple expansion. So the same people could be in the same place and dealing with a different deity.
Yes. Thank you.
Like Gopa Kumar, he's dealing with Krishna in Vrindavan, but he happens to be sitting on the ambulance and all that. But, you know, because he's Krishna, he goes before him and plays on his flute and, you know, all those kind of things. You know, but then, you know, the Vaikunthavasis, then they get upset, you know, you can't do this stuff. This is Vaikuntha, God, you can't get into this kind of jazz. So, you know, he goes out into one of the gardens and then, they see, you know, some who are more broad-minded, okay, you have this mood and that's nice and that you're seeing him as Krishna and that's fine. But because he's manifesting as Narayan, therefore, in front of all these others that can't accommodate that, you just deal with them, you know, in the etiquette of Narayan. And then Krishna comes himself. Vishnu comes, then he talks about how it is. And then he turns into Krishna Vrindavan. There's all the cows, they get up, they're all playing, you know, their flutes, and, you know, it's all happening. The point is it's just who you see. So you can see it's the first group, they're only seeing. The second group they can see is Dwarka, but they all can relate to the Vrindavan, but they're only interested in worshiping him in Dwarka. But then you see Gopa Kumar, because he's from Vrindavan, he just sees that form, that's just Krishna taking that form. So even that first quadruple expansion, you can see it from two sides. Braja Krishna has come as that, or as Dwarka Krishna is, you know, also happens to be, you know, came from there. But you don't see it from that perspective so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Does that make sense?
Thank you very much.
So, yeah, this is the Achinta Beta Veda Tattva. All these things are going on simultaneously. So we can deal with the highest level and the finest points of all aspects of philosophy, you know, like that. You know, I thought, oh, Ramanuja is so difficult. No, his philosophy is really simple, you know. Like that. And so then he doesn't get into any kind of extraneous. He goes into great detail to defeat the Mayavadis, you know, and the logic that's there. But we know, we see that Jiva Goswami doesn't deal on any less level. In fact, it's so wonderful that the Shris themselves read it, because it's the lie is even more perfect than what Ramanujacharya presented. So those who are scholars that are in the attacks is just so good. They're philosophers. They just love seeing how he puts words together. It's just like nectar for them. You know? Yeah. Okay. Okay, so then we should end now. Jai Ho, Jai Ta. Om Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada.